This is Riverside Rank and File, and I'm Steve Matthews, your host. We're very privileged today to have Randy Corgan, president of Teamsters 1932, as our guest. Randy is one of the most dynamic leaders in labor, certainly in California, I would say. I think it's safe to say, not just the inland area. We'll be hearing from him with issues that he does differently than other labor leaders in a way that's really beneficial to building a stronger place for blue collar and other workers in our area. Randy, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Steve. Appreciate it.
It is a privilege.
We've known each other a long time.
We've known each other a long time, and I've been privileged to know you. And so we want to talk a little bit about how 1932 came to be and how it became a Teamster local. It was an independent association before, which a lot of those associations don't exist anymore for different reasons. And clearly it became a very big issue that 1932 became a very good Teamster local. Can you talk a little bit about how that came to be, how people came to you, how you took that challenge on to build a Teamster local there in San Bernardino?
One of the things that we noticed many years ago before we chartered Teamsters 1932, which was chartered in 2015, what we always had noticed about the prior organization, the San Bernardino Public Employees Association, was it not only had a relationship, in a sense, a bargaining relationship with the largest county in the United States, it also had a relationship, a bargaining relationship with dozens and dozens of agencies in the region, and really had a lot of like political power right underneath the feet that within the community. As an independent, it didn't appear as if they were exercising it as well as they could, especially in modern times. I would say 60, 70 years ago, it was much easier for independents to operate by themselves. Mm-hmm. But with the consolidation of corporate America, corporate wealth, and how they've pushed themselves even into public entities, it's really, in my opinion, it's really hard for independent associations. They're not going to have the resources. They're not going to have the reach. They're not going to have the ability to deal with all the dynamics, not just in bargaining, but within the community itself. And then the political infrastructure to be able to use your political ability to move things around. Recognizing that for the better part of a couple decades, I always worked in concert with that association, never really attacked them, even when they had some struggles, because I always felt like at some point there would be an opportunity for them mm-hmm. to literally just take that entity and just become an independent local union. And then that happened in 2014 and 2015. Clearly the vote of the membership happened in 15. And as we were going through that organizing effort for them to become Teamsters, one of the things that we explained over and over again was we need to come up with an approach and a vision for the region. And the Inland Empire had been, in my opinion, had been really taken advantage of by corporate interest, big money, elected officials that developers were controlling, mm-hmm. and using the cheap dirt in the region to then manipulate the outcome of a lot of this building that was going on, right. A lot of these warehouses. Right. And then obviously they created a lot of bad jobs, and then that's just all around bad for the economy. And so one of the things that we were able to focus the membership on within Teamsters 1932 as a brand new organization in 2015 was transforming the Inland Empire. And what did transforming the Inland Empire mean? What did that vision mean? It meant getting these entities to start to work together and use their collective strength in a way to stop corporate America from taking advantage and kind of exploiting that resource, exploiting the workers in the area.
And this vision that you have and the analysis of that, this is something you discuss with your members as well. It's not just a handful of people that are in 1932 that see this as a problem and a challenge, but you also educate your members about why this is important to their families to develop a powerful local union that 1932 is.
I think that the reason why transforming the Inland Empire stuck pretty well was because everybody was all in. So in other words, the community, the members, others, people within the industry or related industries recognized that message was actually real. It wasn't like just some slogan for the sake of having a slogan. Right. It was real in a sense that something had to happen, something had to change. And there needed to be a plan to do it. And clearly the membership very widely and very assertively were like, I'm all in. And that obviously really helps, makes the path a bit smoother, because clearly you're not trying to convince everybody of something at the same time you're trying to get some work done. I think that the general consensus was this needs to happen. Yeah, training the members, educating them, having dozens and dozens of events, community events, training events, integrating the membership into the community itself, having elected officials understand those dynamics, and also getting the general public to understand how important all these jobs are that our members do.
And it's over 10 years now, so people know that this is a commitment from you to deal with the area, with the public, with these entities. So it's not just while you were developing 1932, but that's really the fiber of who you are. You're trying to deal with this real, this fight to make sure that we're connected in a way we can transform the area.
Yeah, and getting part of that fight and that transformation was really getting across the message that whether you're a dispatcher or you handle water or sewage or roads or transitional assistance, all these different public jobs, public sector jobs that are very important to the community, foster care, child support, all these really important things for our community, how important these are, and you got to raise the value of them so that everybody recognizes how important they are. And I think that as that happened and transforming the Inland Empire happens at the same time, I think that is why our brand is now so strong and so dominant. It's not just because you see the billboards and the buses and the radio show and all the different things we're doing as kind of reminders, but it's also the fact that there's something behind the walk. We're not just talking the talk. Yeah. We're walking the walk. We're knocking on the doors, and there is tangible results transformation.
Results. That's what people see as the
That's
results.
Correct. They see that, and they're living those results right now.
Right. As I mentioned to you, that there is a nationwide this union podcast, and these union podcasters know of those results and know of you.
Yes.
And it was when I became part of this network, and people said, oh, do you know Randy Corgan? And I said, hell yeah, of course I know Randy Corgan. He's got a good reputation in this area. So, well, beyond this area, he's got a reputation. So it was nice to hear that too, that people want to see results, and labor is looking for its way going forward. So someone that shows them a different way, like what you're doing, is something I think people are hungry to see. People in your union, but people also in labor across the country.
On the podcast side of things and this sort of platform, man, I'm having a ton of fun with it, I'll tell you. Like, it's been really fun the last few years to be able to get on this platform and just slowly walk everybody through how important unions are. It's been really fun to integrate pieces of the community, integrate the small business community, integrate elected leaders, people running for office, our members, those jobs. And they all come together in this platform where we obviously do a live radio show, and the Worker Power Hour for us is this really fun space where the union's slowly telling its story over a period of time. Uh-huh. And as far as I'm concerned, for us, maybe it's a new way to do things, but I'm excited to see, and it's great to hear that others understand or know, or we know about theirs. I've been invited on a lot of them over the years, and I always tell everybody, I'll go on yours, you come on mine, and what we're doing is we're going to lift each other up. That's how unions work.
Speaking of which, I'd love to come on your program too. So
absolutely.
I've heard your Teamster Power Hour, and it's amazing. It's amazing, your program. You've got a good variety of people on your show. And so you're very interested in reciprocating and having, I might say, there as well. So
yeah, we have sure had people from all over the country. That has been fun. We have had different dynamics. Obviously, we try not to get too much into the political stuff, in a sense of we don't want the message to get lost in the political dynamics, especially in today's sort of political dynamics. Yeah, you got to talk about some of the things that are happening in the political world, but I think really it's about results and what can you do different? Because if you don't like the outcome of something, and you don't like how it's happening, then you got to be involved, you got to participate, and you got to vote, and you got to put your feet in the ground and make something happen. You can't just sit back and complain. You got to participate in something to edge the space out and make sure that you're making a difference.
You certainly have been someone who can deal with the serious issues that are facing workers today. And we'll talk a little bit about that, but you also have a sense of humor. I remember I invited you to speak in Riverside, and I invited what then Sheriff Stan Smith. to speak, and he came on before you, and then you got up and you said, just turning on a dime, you said, this is a rare thing for me. I don't usually come on after the sheriff. He usually comes after me.
Right.
Very so true. People
that
certainly
was a funny day.
People broke up when you said that, but then you're always able to get people revved up. And that is one of the reasons I always invited you to speak when I had an opportunity to have you speak, because you would always speak the truth to people and get them fired up. And I think you're still doing that.
So. I am. I enjoy doing it because I feel that my history, my experience, and my life, really my entire adult life spent in the labor movement, has given me an opportunity to share with others. And it's okay to just let it fly. It's okay to kind of put yourself out there a bit, be a little bit vulnerable, and just say, hey, this is where we are. This is what we got to do. This is what we've learned from the past. This is what we've learned from some great leaders in the past that have made some incredible things happen. And we owe it to them to just get in there and get our hands dirty and make something happen. And that's okay. It's okay to step in there and let your energy flow and just sometimes be a little bit emotional with it. You're going to be all right.
There's nothing wrong with being emotional, but also the follow-through. And some of your follow-through is, not only do you negotiate collective bargaining agreements for your members, you have obviously the democracy of how you have your union meetings there that I've actually seen, but you also are an organizer. And I think people that are in labor, and labor leaders, not everyone is an organizer. And from the first time I talked to you, that was something of getting members active and having member organizers was important to you. It's important to the labor movement that we have that. We need more of that. I do applaud you for that orientation that you have about member organizers.
Yeah, and speaking of organizing, here in the Low Desert, we've actually been organizing like mad over the last couple of years. We've picked up a lot of large units, and just last week, the city of Palm Springs. And so not only are the school district employees for Palm Springs School District Teamsters with 986, now the city employees, including the airport, are with Teamsters 1932. And we're proud of that fact, and we love to see that more and more groups are gravitating towards that collective action here, especially out here in the Low Desert. There's so much opportunity. We're actually going to be opening up an office out here, Teamsters 1932 office, because our growth has been so big. And it really boils down to the commitment to organizing. And what you said something about volunteers, I think it's important.
Oh, yeah.
Is I think at least my personal success within the organizations or different parts of the organization I've been in, I've always utilized the members to be part of that space. And the members, member-to-member organizing, knocking on a door, getting them to understand the importance of this collective action, getting them to understand the importance of collective bargaining, has just led to success after success. It's hard to move people in that space, but the more you're diligent and you stick to it, that engagement, members are able to lead others in their very industry or others to do similar jobs. It's easier for them to lead them than it is for me. I'm just a conduit that's gonna help connect them to it.
And once you have those success, which you've had, and people come in that way into the union, then some of those people can hopefully help bring yet more people in.
I've got an old rule. It's from many decades ago, way before my time. It's always figure out a way to pay for yourself. If you could figure out a way to pay for yourself and you teach the next person to figure out how they pay for them. So in other words, grow enough that you can pay your own salary within the organization, then the next person is going to do the same thing, and that growth is going to just keep moving through the labor movement, and every more and more people are going to experience the collective bargaining process, and you don't end up becoming polarized or paralyzed and stagnant. You continue to move in a growth mode. I've spent over 30 years in growth mode, and I'm now proud to say that I've been part of more than 40,000 workers that are now dues-paying Teamsters within this union, and that's a lot of fun.
So some of those are not in 1932, because you've done a kind of a breadth of organizing as well in other parts of...
Yeah, they're all over the country, yeah.
But in 1932, how many members are in 1932 at this point?
16,000.
16,000. So yes. It makes one of the larger unions within the inland area.
Yes.
If not the largest.
And within the Teamsters, we're like number five or six on the list.
Like in the country?
In the country. And I think one of the things I take a lot of pride in is that not a lot of people can say this, is that especially having an organization, being in charge of an organization that's that large, is we've actually organized every single worker, every member, every unit that is in our local union has been come off of an organizing effort from one of our teams. That's a powerful statement.
That's a powerful statement, and it's a variety of classifications of workers. I know you have professionals, you have blue-collar workers, and you have the whole breadth of that together.
Yeah, just a couple hours ago, I spent an hour in the morning, a little more than an hour, with our probation directors. So they're not just managers, they're directors above the managers that we represent in San Bernardino County. So we actually represent all the director positions across San Bernardino County for the various different departments. And so I'm sitting in a room with like 35 of them, and then I can go over to a room of dispatchers, or we can deal with we now represent the airport over in Palm Springs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got air traffic controllers. We got zookeepers. So you have everything from A to Z actually in our local. We got zookeepers in our local union that we represent. And it's really, some people will say, oh, that's too wide. That's too spread out. You need to be focused in on one area. I completely disagree with that. The diversity, having the diversity across multiple classifications, across that include nurses, and do include truck drivers and include everything. I know everybody looks at the teams and say, oh, they must be a truck driver, when the reality is we're actually a majority of everything else and actually the minority of truck drivers. But that's okay. That's our history. We don't forget that. Point is, when you do have that ability, that diversity within the workplace, mm-hmm. hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, 863 classifications in our local alone.
Wow,
that's diversity when you have a fight.
Quite a breadth of people.
Yep. And it gets everybody to understand each other's struggles so that you can come together for a common interest. It creates other challenges, but at the end of the day, that's the strength that you have at the bargaining table.
But you didn't leave out the truck drivers, which is where I come from. I was a truck driver for 10 years.
That's right.
I'd like you to be able to speak into the camera as we're doing here and tell anyone that's listening to this that's not in a union why they should join the Teamsters Union. And let them know. You get a chance to do your pitch.
I'm on, huh?
You're
it's
on. You're on the spot here. It's your elevator speech. It's two minutes.
I think that the most important thing that we need to recognize as workers in America is that corporate America has never, ever handed us anything. Corporate America, if we're up to them, we started in 1776, and they thought it was okay to own labor. They thought it was okay to enslave an entire population of people. And then they thought it was okay to do that for nearly 100 years. And then they fought equality for the next 100 years after that. Workers' rights were always on the back burner. Workers' rights have never been just given away, given to the public or given to working people. Workers have always had to fight for that. And why I think it's important for every worker to understand that is go back in history and look at that journey. Look at what happened in the 1930s, 1940s, and 1950s, and how workers in America didn't progress and weren't able to buy homes, be able to have a good working class job, good working class, middle class lifestyle in a neighborhood where kids can go to school, they can go on vacation, they can enjoy a life, punch their ticket at a certain point to retire. Mm-hmm. None of that happened until workers came together and demanded a change. Corporate America, which is in control of this country right now, corporate America has never willingly given us any rule, 40 hours, health care, retirement plans, safety on the job, rules when it comes to how long you can drive and how you're affected. Even this goes so far as to the water you drink. Corporate America has fought every single rule where we've tried to prevent the poisoning of water. And so why is it important for workers to organize? Because that is the only common space that workers have benefited for more than 150 years in America. Now, prior to 1934, it was actually illegal to organize, crazily enough. And still to this day, I was actually pointing this out in our membership meeting, even some industries to this day, like farm workers in multiple states and 17 states in the United States still don't have a legal right under the law to organize.
Which is shameful.
This is 2026. Yep. What are you saying? And the reason that happened is they were left off in 1934, 1935, because of cotton and textile. Yep. and who owned the farms. They left that entire industry out because they wanted to continue to exploit them. And so my point to it is any gain for people in America has always been won with workers and with unions being the advocate to make that change, whether it's at the bargaining table, at the city, or at the federal level.
So you mentioned certain people have been left out.
Did I do a good job?
I would try. I don't know if that's the criteria, but there certainly is. People have been left out. People have been included because they fought to be included. And now people are under challenge as workers in our country, and things are being threatened to be taken away.
Can you address? Not just threatened, they are being taken away.
They're being taken away.
Yeah.
Being taken away and being threatened to be more to be taken away. Can you address a little bit of that so that we can include the people that know that's going on? That's one thing, but they may not know some of the threats.
Look, 1 million workers in America have lost their collective bargaining rights. That's your First Amendment right. That's your freedom to assemble. That's your freedom of speech. Those issues under the First Amendment is what carried in 1934 and 1935 for you to have protected concerted activity, which gave you the right to organize. If you allow these rights to be stripped away and you do nothing about it, then the rest of your First Amendment rights are going to be stripped away on top of it. And first, let's just talk about not the secondary issue. The primary issue is these rights were already gained. Why would we allow this without a fight? Obviously, we're not.
Exactly.
There's a lot of people that are fighting back right now in a lot of different ways. And I'm watching workers right now. I'm watching workers walk off the job. I'm watching workers shut down operations. Mm-hmm. I'm watching workers exercise their worker power, lean into it and say, you're not going to do this kind of stuff to us. We're going to fight back. And so we're at this really interesting point in America where the electorate last year, a little more than a year ago, basically turned over the reins to corporate America. Corporate America cannot control themselves. It's all about make America greedy again. Mm-hmm. They cannot control themselves. They've never, for thousands of years, not just in America, but across the world, they've never, whenever they have ultimate power and the money, there's no backstop for them. They keep going and taking more and hurting more and or killing more or exploiting more. And I think it's really important for us to recognize this moment and do something about it. Don't just complain. Get out there and do something about it.
So workers want to make sure that they have leadership that are willing to fight.
I would assume so, yes.
We have someone like that sitting in the seat next to me that's willing to fight.
I would say I fall in that category.
You fall in that category. Right. We need more people that are willing to fight. That's what workers want to see. I think there's a lot of us that are dedicated to see that the Democratic Party has people that are willing to fight, but we lost people in the Democratic Party that are blue-collar workers because they did not feel the party was fighting for them. And so I think that we're looking to see how that fights back, but it can only fight back if there are labor leaders as well as political leaders willing to fight. So I would just say that we need more people that are willing to not just sit in the seat and talk about what they believe in, but are willing to do like you clearly have.
Well, I also think it goes to the elected leaders too. I just saw a couple races in different parts of the country. Forgive me for not remembering their names. I was covering it on the radio show yesterday. And these individuals are winning that have a labor platform because whether you're a D or an R, guess what happens? 80%+ of people end up, I want the worker. And the Republican Party and the Democratic Party clearly have drifted away too far from what's important for working people. And as a result, there's a level of distrust in the both parties regarding that subject. And I think it's time that those elected officials lean back into labor, use labor as their primary foundation, and say, hey, I'm going to do what's best for working people, not what's best for the corporations, not a compromise, really what's best for working people. And then we're going to find solutions in that space. Those individuals are winning overwhelmingly by far, regardless of what party line they're in and what district leans in that party line.
If people see someone willing to fight for them, they're more likely to act themselves.
And they also need to feel like that person's going to fight for them, not just words, because we've seen that here recently where some words were told, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and there's some surface stuff. But the reality, there's an undermining to the foundation of what workers need.
Or you burn trust if you do that.
That's correct.
So I want to make sure that people understand that we need more people that are willing to fight as labor leaders, and we have labor leaders willing to fight. We have good people that are dedicated.
Look, I'll say it here. There's not enough labor leaders out there that are willing to fight right now. And you all got to get moving. Okay. I'm telling you right now, okay. And people may not like that I'm saying this. I'm not going to call people out and say, hey, and create undermine or dissension. I'm just saying, let's get in this fight. Let's get rolling. Let's make some things happen.
So I would say, get on Randy's radio show, make your commitments, but it's because you've done the work with your workers that you represent, and come here as well and say what you're going to commit to do and then do it. If you're a labor leader, if you're a political leader, use these venues. Use Randy's radio show, use this podcast, but be doing the work. We need people who are willing to fight, and we have an ability to make change with commitment, with proof. And again, I'm very happy that you come on this program, Randy. I have respect for you. I appreciate you being here. This is Steve Matthews, and this is Riverside Rank and File. Thank you.
Riverside Rank and File is hosted by Steve Matthews, produced by Sam Page and executive producer Joy Silver, and is a production of the United American Network.